This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is the Skate Podcast, talking Bruins hockey with WEEI Bruins writers Scott McLaughlin, Bridget Prue, and Brian DeFelice. Lace them up for some Bees talk. It's Odyssey's The Skate Pod on WEEI. Woo!
Welcome into episode 290 of The Skate Podcast. I'm Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. Bridget and Scott, the Bruins with a dominant win over the Ottawa Senators last night at the Garden. Lots to talk about from that game, recent games, and what we have to discuss going down the stretch here and into the playoffs. So why don't we get right into the opening shifts? And Bridget, why don't we start with you?
Okay, yeah, because I mean, this was the main thing that came out of the game. David Pastrnak had another hat trick, and then what went viral was his choice of hat. It was a wonderful like bear rug outfit. It was, and by the way, in person it was creepy. Like, it was a lot creepier than I thought when I first saw him pick it up off the ice. I thought it was gonna be like this cartoon looking bear. Instead, it was like more realistic and it looked like a legit dead bear, and I was like, that's kind of creepy. And so I was really hoping he washed it before he put it on, but he didn't, and he just went and threw that on, took some pictures. I was kind of hoping he came out to post-game interviews with it on so that we could get some pictures with him in it, and it just would have been a great interview. But so he had kind of an unconventional hat trick for him, two backhanders, a tip-in, and we can talk about how his line played and how some of the defensemen helped assist on some of those goals. So overall, just really fun to watch him once again, and his personality makes it memorable, not just the hat trick with grabbing the bear. So he's always someone that draws attention to the Bruins for positive reasons. It's just nice to see him do that with the way that he acted yesterday.
Yeah, Bruins PR tweeted out a photo of him. He did put it on after the game. So they posted that on Twitter, Instagram. And
yeah, it's a little cringy.
Yeah, it's like he didn't zip it all up because I think that bear costume thing, I think it actually does like fully zip up, but he just kind of draped it over his head, and he looked, you guys probably have not seen this movie, maybe some people listening have, but it looked like a scene from Midsommar, which was kind of like a horror movie that came out a few years back. But there's a scene towards the end where a guy gets basically sewed into a bear pelt, and he's just sitting there, and you can just see his face.
What the hell?
Hey, listen, I'm not the only one who thought it because Connor tweeted it out.
You just killed my whole vibe. I'm cutting that out.
Why don't we just move along to Scott's opening shift here?
Oh my God. Jesus.
You psychopath.
I'm literally cutting that out, okay?
It was a pretty popular movie. Florence Pugh was
disgusting. I was saying how funny it was.
I respect
funny
the energy,
because
Scott.
It reminded people of a horrible scene in the movie.
That's hilarious, Scott. You're right. Yeah. That's hilarious.
I respect the tone setting here by Scott, actually. So here we go. We're off and running here.
Yeah, this is just gonna be a total horror show of a podcast. So
great.
Buckle up, folks.
I am getting stalked by my cat right now, so maybe.
Well, it's about to be a
Bridget's gonna get attacked by her cat.
It's about to be a horror show podcast for Jeremy Swayman fans when they get a taste of what Scott wants to talk about here.
No, we get a dog too. Here we go. I heard Melvin injured Bridget.
He did. He got me. He bit my finger on accident.
Oh boy.
He thought it was a stick. I was throwing him a stick and he bit the hand and knocked the stick. Oh, big yawn.
He's like, yeah, can you get to your Allmark take? Jesus. okay, yeah, so my opening shift is Linus Allmark had a third straight really good start. Stopped 30 out of 32. And I know it's, you know, it can be tempting to be like, oh, well, it was against the Ottawa Senators, so, you know, how much does it really matter? Well, they got their chances. You know, they landed 23 shots on goal in the second period, 12 of them on the power play. They got three power plays, including, I think it was 37 seconds of a 5-on-3. Allmark had to make some really good saves, and the game was still in the balance at that point. It was 2-0 and then 2-1, and he was coming up big in that second period. You know, obviously the Bruins pull away in the third, but they did need Allmark to be on top of his game in that second. And, you know, I do think he probably could have done better on Ottawa's second goal. I would say that's fair. You know, there's a shot in close from Tkachuk. He can't quite hold on to the rebound and pops out. Tkachuk buries it. I would also say, you know, it would be nice to have some net front defense there. Tkachuk basically got all the room and all the wax at those rebounds that he wanted. But where this leads me is that I would have to say that right now, Allmark has nudged ahead of Jeremy Swayman for the game one start. And it's close. I'm not saying it's over. There's still 12 games to go. And Swayman had two big wins over Toronto just a couple weeks ago. But he's given up 9 goals in his last 2 starts, so that's not what you're looking for. He's had some other tough games since the All-Star break. But a big opportunity for Swayman to swing it back Thursday night. Assuming they stick with the rotation, it'll be Swayman getting the Rangers, who obviously are one of the top teams in the conference. And, you know, this should be a pretty good measuring stick game for the Bruins and for Swayman if he gets the start.
So right now we have about a month left in the season, and the Bruins somehow, some way, they have the most points in the National Hockey League, which has them right now as the current President's Trophy winners or leaders in the clubhouse per se. But you wouldn't know that by listening to fans of other teams, league experts, whether it's with The Athletic or NHL.com or just TSN or anywhere really, ESPN, anybody who covers the game or watches the game, this Bruins team has very little hype as a President's Trophy leader currently. And it just got me wondering, like, why that might be. And does that even matter, right? If the casual or hardcore hockey fan, a non-Boston Bruins fan and a league expert or analyst were to predict the playoffs right now, I'm fairly certain that the Bruins, despite being the President's Trophy leaders right now, wouldn't be on many non-Bruins fans' playoff brackets in the Eastern Conference Finals or the Stanley Cup Finals. And I find it fascinating, and I don't, and I'll get to in a minute why that doesn't matter, but it's a bit deceiving because the Bruins, while having the most points in the National Hockey League right now, they're seventh in the league in team plus minus. They're seventh in the league in wins and regulation wins. So that kind of speaks for itself a little bit why people might not be buying in on them completely. And I want to get your guys' opinion on it, but I guess just my two cents real quickly is good. Allow people to not pick them. That's what I want. I don't want the Bruins going to the playoffs this year with all this pressure of having to go to the Stanley Cup Finals, because those are the teams that oftentimes, as we saw last year with Boston, they flounder. They succumb to pressure and expectations. And if the Bruins are going to enter the playoffs, whether they're the President's Trophy winners or not, but either way, they'll be a top 2, 3, 4 team in the league by the end of the season. Wherever they finish, if people want to write them off and say they're not as good as the other top 10 teams and they're kind of deceiving and they're a bit of a fraud team because they've collected so many overtime loss points and they don't want to pick the Bruins to go far, go for it. Like, I don't know about you guys, but that's kind of refreshing to me. If the Bruins want to embrace this kind of underdog mentality, despite being in the standings a top team, It's kind of a change of pace from last year. So I just find it interesting in general. I don't know what you guys feel about this.
Yeah, I think for some of the reasons you mentioned, you know, the lack of, comparatively to other top teams, lack of wins, regulation wins, being a little lower in plus minus. If you get into like the analytics side of it, like they're not going to be a favorite among that community. You know, just to pick one metric, expected goals for percentage, Bruins are 14th in the NHL, like basically middle of the pack. So yeah, for all those reasons, they're not going to be a favorite, whether they win the President's Trophy or not. And I do think that's probably a good thing. You know, I think this team not having all the same pressures last season is probably good for them. And if they can, you know, put some sort of chip on their shoulder because people are counting them out or picking them to, you know, not get past the second round or whatever it is, like, you know, it's one of those things. It's where it's like, in real time, athletes will deny that they care about those things or look at any of it or need bulletin board material, but yet they all use it. Like, they'll all admit to it after the fact, years later. So, yeah, you know, if they can pull up like some predictions of, hey, here's everyone's Stanley Cup pick, and you know, 30 people from ESPN, and none of them pick us, like, great. You know, they can use that. That's good. So, yeah, I know, you know, we've talked before about like President's Trophy curse and all that, and I still don't believe in it even after last year. I just don't care where you finish, but pressure and expectations both internally and externally, that I do care about, because that I do think can get to guys. Like, I think it did kind of build on last year's Bruins team, especially as Florida starts to come back in that series. It's not, you know, it can seep in of like, holy crap, like we can't blow this after the season we had, how we can't possibly blow it. And you start putting all that pressure on yourself. So if they can go into the playoffs this year without it, I think that's only a good thing.
Yeah, I don't believe in the curse, but I do think that like you said, the pressure is a result of being the number one team. Doesn't, there's no curse involved. It's just like psychology, right? Like, everybody picks you to win, and you know you have the best team ever, and you're trying, like, there just was that little added edge that did not work in their favor. But now not being that team that's basically, I mean, and this was being said on talk radio all of last year heading into the playoffs, once they were, you know, looked like they were going to finish with the best record in hockey ever, was that it would be the biggest choke ever if they lost in the first round. And you, like, it's like, it seeps in. But to your first point, Brian, about nobody giving them credit and being the first place team, like, it's still kind of crazy to me, right? Like, the fact that no one wants to give them at least a, like, not just a few people think that they have a good enough team to go. Like, I don't know. Maybe the doubt comes from last year. Maybe the doubt comes from what you were saying about the regulation wins and, you know, not being top of the league in that category. But I don't see why they couldn't make a run to the final. I mean, is that crazy to think?
No, I mean, no, it's not crazy to think. I mean, anything can happen in hockey, and especially in the postseason. The parity is so great. But I think at the end of the day, while a lot of their analytics for a top team are not the greatest compared to the top 10 teams, call it, in the NHL, I still think even if those analytics were still true, even if they still had a shit ton of overtime loss points, and even if they still were seventh in plus minus and seventh in wins, and like all that stuff was still true, I don't think people would be doubting them as much if they still had like a true number one center. Now, again, no disrespect to Charlie Coyle, because he's putting up lower tier number one center numbers this year, and he's having a fantastic season. But I think from the outside looking in, and I think even maybe Bruins fans too, to an extent, whether they acknowledge it or not, they probably look at Boston up the middle and say, just like, how do you match up against, you know, the other top teams, top centers. But I think that's subconsciously still something that people are knocking the Bruins for. And is it fair? No. Are they still playing great as a team, like at that position? Like, yeah, I just think optically, people will literally look at the Bruins depth chart at center and see Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zacha, and they'll match them up against Barkov in Florida or Matthews or Zibanejad and other like it or whatever. I just think optically people, and don't even get me started, the Western Conference is stacked at center. So I think optically people are looking at that as well, in addition to some of these deceiving underlying stats as well.
But when you look at the personnel you need for the playoffs, like, they have one of the best decors, if not the best decor. And they got better at the deadline at D. I think Peak was a good addition, even though he's not getting, like, he's not a top four guy. He's a third pair guy. I think he made your team better. You have really solid defense, more so than some of the other teams in your conference. You have the best goaltending of any one in your conference. And you have people who can score. And now you see guys like Brazo and Boqvist scoring, so you have depth scoring. And then hopefully if Maroon is healthy, you have a little bit more grit. And it just seems like, okay, on paper, those are the things you would want for a playoff run. And Bruins have those things, even though they might not have the most flashy centers. Scott, just wait a second. but like on paper, I don't see why people just pass up the fact that, and I know exactly what you're going to say, Scott, which is that they don't close out games or whatever. But like, no, I'm talking
that's
about.
That's not where I was going to go.
Okay. Well, that's what usually Scott comes in and he's like, actually, Bridget, they can't close out games. but I think, can you argue with me that they don't have like a good enough, like the right kind of personnel to make a deeper run in the playoffs than just like dismiss them? I don't think they have that.
Well, I'd say even in those areas that are supposed to be strengths, I don't think. Even if they are still a strength over other teams, which I think is debatable, it's not nearly what it was last year. Like, this D-core has not been.
Yeah, but can we not talk about last year? Because that's like, it's in the past, and I don't really even care about last year at this point. But
we're still citing that as like the strength of this team. Like, we're still saying they have better defense and goaltending. And I'm
like,
has that really been true this season? Like, I mean, Florida has a really good D-core, and Sergei Bobrovsky's been awesome the second half of the season. Like, are we sure the Bruins are better defensively and in goal than the Panthers? Or, you know, I think Carolina has a better decor. They don't have better goaltending. I think they have a better defense, though. The Bruins give up a lot of high danger chances. Like, that's still true. That they've cut back on it a little. They've gotten a little better recently. But for the season as a whole, like, that's still a concern going into the playoffs. They give up more than the Panthers, Hurricanes do. In particular, like, just starting there, because I know the Rangers are up there too. I'm going to be the last holdout on the Rangers. I'm just still not totally sold on that team. I don't think they're a very good 5-on-5 team. But hey, they're up there in points as well. And obviously they have some headline talent, but yeah. So I don't know. Like, when we say, well, defense and goaltending, I'm like, maybe, but I just don't think it's
really. I can't believe you with that. Like, honestly, I can't believe you with that.
Well,
maybe. Like, yeah, maybe, I mean, their defense and goaltending is decent enough to make it to, like, they have Charlie McAvoy, they have Hampus Lindholm, they have Brandon Carlo, and then they have these other pieces around that fill in and fit in well. Like, I've thought Weatherspoon's played well, I've thought Peak's played well. Grizzlick had a good game. Shattenkirk came in and played his offside, had a good game. Like, those are people that you can trust. I would say, like, if I'm not
they're,
sure about.
They're still 16th in the NHL in high danger chances allowed. Like, I just can't consider that an elite defense.
If I may, real quick, just to kind of play mediator, I think that you guys are both right in a sense, because, Bridget, when you rattle off the Bruins personnel on the blue line, I think that, aside from Carolina and Florida and maybe the Rangers, like, I think if you look at the rest of the Eastern Conference playoff teams, the Bruins personnel on defense is certainly higher caliber. But what Scott, where you're coming from, the guys that play defense for you on the blue line, they're just one facet of your team's defense, right? So, Scott, what you're referring to, I think, applies more to the Bruins' defense as a team, which is what matters at the end of the day. I think the Bruins as a team defensively are weaker. The Bruins as a team defensively are weaker than the Bruins' blue line personnel comparative to the other teams.
Yeah, does that make sense? Yeah, absolutely. Because sometimes the forwards lose their guys in coverage and then they just bank one in. Or they get a high danger chance.
Yeah, and like rush defense has been an issue at times, and that is, you know, forwards are a huge part of that. Like, you have to take away the right lanes, you have to back check, you have to not turn the puck over in the offensive zone in the first place. So, yes, it's I'm not just talking about personnel, I'm talking about team defense. But, you know, I think when we talk about, like, who has the best defense, I think that's generally what we mean. Because you're certainly not talking about like the Bruins defensemen offensively, because they don't rank high in terms of defensemen scoring. Like, they're pretty far down. I think they're in the 20s. So it's not that. So, like, I think we are talking about defensive play.
Yeah, we are. Absolutely, yeah. We are. And I'm talking about those are very solid defensemen. Like, those
even personnel wise, I would say there's still a big question mark in Grizzly's spot. Like, I still think for like a true cup contender, you're one legitimate top four defenseman short. Now, so are some other teams. Like, I'm not saying, you know, every other contender has an incredible top four, but, you know, if we're going to talk about personnel, like, that's still a spot where I think there's a question mark of how Grizzly's going to hold up in the playoffs. It has been a bit of an inconsistent season for him. And, you know, the backup option there would be Mason Lorai, who's an inexperienced rookie who still makes some mistakes. So, you know, I even just strictly personnel wise, I think there's also still a question there.
I thought Grizzly played well against Ottawa.
Yeah, I think he's played well recently in general.
And I thought Shattenkirk had a bounce back game. Like, you as coach about it, he played his offside and he looked very comfortable.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's a butterfly effect for
real. You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So just jumping back quickly to the whole President's Trophy thing, because I'm not big into curses, although it did take the Red Sox 86 years, and that was kind of a fun curse to defeat. But it is interesting because on the one hand, we say the curses don't – there's no such thing as curses, but because of the President's Trophy assignment, like, there comes the pressure and the expectations, and that's what makes people fall. It's kind of a chicken or an egg thing, but that's not my point. To the President's Trophy winner, can you guys remember a President's Trophy winner that just had no expectations at all? Because I'm looking at this list, and the only President's Trophy winner that I see here, and I look back and say, yeah, I can see NHL experts not picking him to win the cup or even come close, would be the 2018 President's Trophy winners, which were the Nashville Predators, and they fell in the second round to Winnipeg. Every other team dating back to the early 90s, which is, I think, when they started having this trophy, it's juggernauts. Whether they won the cup or not, like, the expectations would have been there. So, is it the same for you guys? Can you not really think of any teams besides this year's Bruins, if they were to win, that, like, just don't really have the expectations?
Yeah, I think maybe the Panthers in 22. Like, I feel like, I think people thought they were good, but I don't know that too many people really expected them to win the cup. They had sort of, you know, it was sort of like a one season build up to that where they just burst onto the scene. And I feel like people didn't entirely take them seriously. I know, you know, former Sunday Skate co-host Matt Kalman repeatedly referred to them as the paper Panthers. He never believed in them, and to his credit, turned out to be right about them. So maybe them, but that team had 122 points, which is tough to ignore. Like, that's, you know, that's not like a 112 point Presidents Trophy. Like, that's a legit, you know, really good record.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if you think to the Tampa teams that were in first, like, those were all, that was a team that you're like, okay, yeah, they could win a cup. Yeah, no, you're right, Brian. I think that those teams were all pretty stacked, and then you'd put the Bruins last year pretty much at the top of that list. But obviously didn't go far with it. So,
even that Predators team, that was Pekka Rinne's Vezina season. So, like, even if you didn't believe in the rest of the team, it was like Pekka Rinne was the best goalie in the world that year.
So you mentioned the Panthers a minute ago, Scott. Right now they're nipping at the Bruins' heels. They're 3 points back of Boston, two games in hand. So if they went out, they would surpass the Bruins. But do you, looking at the standings right now, Tampa and Toronto and Florida would play each other in that 2-3 matchup, and the Bruins would draw the Red Wings. The Lightning seem to have a pretty good hold on the first wild card, so I think they'll probably end up playing, I guess, one of the top, probably maybe the Rangers, maybe the first place of the Atlantic. I guess my question is, would you guys rather the Bruins finish in second and face Toronto, or would you rather take your chances on the wild card teams with Tampa and Detroit in the mix, maybe the Islanders or Washington? Or is it just one of those things where it just doesn't matter? But just for talk, for conversation's sake, I suppose.
I mean, I would pick the Bruins to win any of those series, but, you know, it's that interesting debate of, like, listen, I think Toronto is better than certainly Detroit, Washington, Islanders, Flyers if they fall down into a wild card spot. Like, I think the Leafs are better than all those teams. Lightning might be close. That's a debate, Toronto or Tampa. But would you rather catch the Leafs because, one, you've kind of had their number this year. Two, they've been secured in a playoff spot for a while now too, so they're not playing with, you know, all out desperation either.
Like the Panthers last year.
Right. Like that's what scares you about those wildcard teams, is even though you look at them on paper and you're like, yeah, the Bruins are better than Capitals, Islanders, Flyers, whoever, Red Wings. Well, those teams are already playing playoff hockey for all intents and purposes. Like, they are battling for their lives for this final month. So whoever gets in has been playing with a lot of desperation for a while and has already kind of found like that playoff level that you have to get to. Emotionally, physically, all of that. So that would be the concern there. So I guess I might actually rather just be the two seed and get Toronto. But I don't know.
I mean, like,
yeah.
Nationally, that would be what everybody would want, right? Like, that would be such a great series. That would have the highest ratings. Any Bruins Toronto series always has incredible ratings and so much viewership, and you know, the fan bases get way too involved in it, and it's great. And then we tune into Canadian TV and we watch, like, if the Leafs lose to the Bruins, like, and something crazy happens, they just melt and they fall apart. And it's entertaining hockey. Just in terms of the entertainment factor, I'd like to see it. But I also do think they match up well just historically this season with Toronto. I will say, if the Flyers were to fall into like a wild card spot and that be who the Bruins get, I'm not scared of the Flyers.
No,
I know the Bruins like gave up a bunch of goals at the end because they stopped playing hockey, but like on a playoff night, that's, you hope that wouldn't happen. I wasn't overly impressed with Philadelphia and the matchup they would present to Boston, so that wouldn't be one that I'd be too afraid of. Tampa, that would be one that you'd rather not have compared to some of the other ones that we're talking about.
Yeah, I also think Detroit's a sneaky team. I just think they have more talent than maybe their record indicates, and they haven't playing meaningful hockey all year. I don't love their blue line, and their highest point scorer is Mason Raymond with like 59 points or something like that. But they also have Patrick Kane, who's got 38 points in 38 games, and obviously is a proven winner. And that team just they have a bit of a swagger about them, and I can see them. I can see Hockey Town being juiced up for their first postseason in what, 6 years or something like that. So that's a matchup that like I could see the Bruins being quote unquote upset in. But yeah, I don't really care either way. Like just, you know, whoever they play, they're just gonna play the right way.
I can't believe Washington is literally 1 point away from being in the playoffs and they were sellers.
It's insane. Like if you look at the roster they're rolling out each night, you're like, how is this team still hanging around? Like it's like half an NHL lineup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they'll probably run out of gas because they still have what, 15 games left. That's a lot of hockey still with an inferior roster. As you said, Scott,
they have a lot of guys that Bruins fans hate. I mean, they have Pacioretty. They have Wilson. I mean, I don't know if Bruins fans hate Ovechkin, but he can get under your skin. Like they have some guys that there's some animosity towards. So and they could, that could be a matchup in the playoffs.
But then in all honesty, and then that's really it. Like that's it. And then you have John Carlson, I think, and that's literally it. TJ Oshie.
Charlie Lindgren's gotten hot in goal. Like that's been the biggest plus for them. And I don't, you know, you always like you look at names and you're like, oh, can that. Doesn't seem like that guy would be able to keep it up, but you know, we see pretty often where like a goalie just gets hot and playing the best hockey of his life. And you know, you can't overlook that. Like Lindgren's on a heater right now.
Yeah. And
that might
team,
be one of those sneaky teams. Like that would literally be the comp this year to last year's Panthers. If they somehow sneak in at the end.
Yes and no, because their roster is literally garbage.
No, I know, but I'm saying like I'm talking about the mentality of the team. Like they have been playing like that. Like they have been having to elevate. It's a really like there's like a 5 or 6 team race for those last two spots. So that's desperate hockey you have to play to beat out those teams to get in. And we know that there is a mindset in Washington like that. So I'm not saying I'm afraid of them, but I'm saying like in terms of playing desperate hockey, they're doing that.
I think that there's still some, at least for me, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like there's still some scar tissue with the Islanders too. Like I wouldn't love seeing that team in the first round. There's still some pieces left over from that team that beat the Bruins in 21. You know, they still have that identity line. They still have, you know, Pulock and Pelech and Noah Dobson on the blue line. Obviously, we know Sorokin's a really good goalie. So
they play the Bruins tough this year.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Washington was one of the Bruins' worst stinkers of the year.
Well, that's another thing, too, about this Bruins team that's been noticed is that they seem to play up and down to their competition. And, mm-hmm. again, that's why we talked about last week why it's important to try to – play these games down the stretch like they matter, because you have to have that desperation. And we talked about how their schedule kind of enables that, because they're playing some tough teams in Florida. I mean, those games against Florida, it could come down to who wins the conference or in the division. That could set up some playoff positioning as well. So again, not that either team will be playing to play Toronto or other teams. I don't think they really care, but
So in can I just drop this in, because this is like, we're talking like the pick your poison conversation, like which team like would you rather play. Obviously they don't really have a whole lot of say in it. I'm sometimes teams do at the end of the year, like do we let this other team win so that we play a different one instead?
They definitely do in the PWHL.
That's what I was just gonna say. So I was on the broadcast talking about this the other day, that the top team in the PWHL gets to choose between the third place and fourth place team who they want to play.
Talking about bulletin board material.
Exactly. And right now Boston is in fourth place. So like if Montreal finishes first and then they're like, we want to play Boston, it's like you can see that would cause animosity. I don't know. They're doing some different things for the playoffs this year in the PWHL. I personally am for it. They have a different anti-tanking rule than the NHL or anywhere else, which is like this whole analytics thing that I'm not 100% up to like par on. But it basically, once teams are mathematically eliminated, those two teams play to get the most points, and whoever gets the most points out of the rest of their games, they get the first pick in the draft. So it's actually you want to win towards the end of the season to get the first pick in the draft. I don't know. I like it. I like trying new things. And I think we can all agree that reverse order drafts and lottery drafts are not always the best way to go about creating more parity in the league.
Especially now when you rig it so Connor Bedard goes to Chicago.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But anyway,
which is a conspiracy theory, I still believe, by the way.
I do too. I'm 100% thinking that that was on purpose, because like, are we gonna send him to Anaheim? No. Okay.
Well, maybe there's some karma and Celebrini goes elsewhere.
Maybe.
Yeah. Celebrini has to go to San Jose, because that's BU West. They get Mike Greer as the GM, David Quinn
as the
coach.
If they get fucking Celebrini the year after that they get Bedard, I'm gonna lose my shit. Like,
odds say that they will.
Say that it's a lottery, and they weren't the worst team last year. So, you know, could come up Boston. I'm just kidding. hopefully he goes somewhere that actually needs him worse. I don't know. It's a whole thing. That doesn't create parity if you have this Celebrini and Bedard on the same team 5 years from now. Good luck, everyone. Good luck. In a few years,
Edmonton's still trying to win with McDavid and Draisaitl. They still haven't broken through. So
their organization is flawed, I guess. But yeah, if you get them both as like rookies on, they like if you can somehow get the team going when they're both still on those contracts, like I don't know, that's a scary thought, honestly.
So jumping back to the Senators game, I know the Bruins brought in Patrick Maroon, and he's not going to get into game action for at least another week. And so I guess we'll see how that plays out. But regardless, whether he's in or not, have the Bruins found a trio that they can maybe feel comfortable with going into the playoffs on the fourth line?
I think so. I mean, you certainly have to keep riding it for now. But yeah, I'm calling it the JB3 line. I'm open to other suggestions, but you know, they're all JBs. Johnny Beecher, Jesper Boqvist, Justin Brazeau.
Wow, so clever.
The JB3, I like that, Scott. That's really good.
All right, did you trademark it, and did you put it on Twitter somewhere to take credit?
I put it in my article today. I haven't tweeted about it yet, but no, yeah, like that line has given you everything you could want from a fourth line. You get Boqvist with, you know, speed and playmaking skill through the middle. Brazeau, you see how he uses his size and touch. Like, I think much more touch than anyone really expected from him around the net. Scores two goals Tuesday night. And then I think Beach has played really well since he's come back. And, you know, obviously faceoffs are a big part of it for him. Even though he's on the wing, he's going to take the vast majority of the faceoffs when that line's out there. I think he's done what you need him to do on the wing. I feel like he's been aggressive. He's been physical. He's used his speed. So as long as that continues, he can stay there. And that's It's been a really good line. It's been two games that they've been together, but Bruins
and each of them has scored at least once.
Yeah, Bruins are outscoring at 5-5. Bruins are outscoring opponents 2-0 and out attempting them 17-8 so far. So absolutely zero complaints. And Brazeau can like actually be a legitimate second power play unit guy. Like that, he really does look good in that net front goal there.
He looked like a first power play unit guy last night. I mean, those were two really nice moves because he didn't have a lot of time to make them and he did it perfectly. And he was a little bit deceptive and he was big and he did exactly what, like at the peak of what you expect from him, that's what we saw. And when we were talking to coach last night, there was like four questions about Brazeau. I asked him, did you ever see you guys using him on the power play? And he was like, yeah, in Providence, he was great net front on the power play. So we thought that once we got him like integrated a little bit more, we'd try him there. And once we got him a few practice there, like we felt more comfortable throwing him in that role. And it's been the most effective part of their power play last game was just get the puck down to Brazeau and he'll find a way to get to the net because he's so big. And I'm happy for him. I mean, his story coming out of nowhere to make the NHL. And then we talked to him after the game as well. And, Xerxes, sorry, cat got me. he's been here the whole time. You probably couldn't see him. But one of the other reporters asked him, does the fact that Pat Maroon is here around the corner and potentially going to be a fourth liner, how, like, does that affect how you play? Like, does that help you elevate or whatever? I'm not sure the exact wording of the question, but it was basically about the competition on the fourth line with Maroon coming back. And he was like, yeah, I know that every game I'm playing for my spot, like every single game I'm playing for my spot. And that's why you see, even though not the whole team is playing desperate hockey, that line is, because that line knows that their spot is up for grabs.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yeah, that Kevin Shattenkirk was another guy who played desperate Tuesday night. Had been a healthy scratch the previous two games. I don't think he was playing poorly before that. I thought he was playing pretty well, but you knew at some point you have to get Andrew Peak games. Like, you have to see what you have. You have to give him a chance to get up to speed. So Shattenkirk naturally is the right shot he's going to draw out. Well, they move him to his offside to get him back in, which I talked to him on Monday, I think. Yeah, I think it was Monday. And he said, he's done it for like a few games here and there at times in his career, but never regularly. Well, you wouldn't know, just watching Tuesday night, you wouldn't know that it's something he hasn't done very much because he looked pretty good. And he said after the game, he felt like there were a couple plays where he got caught a little, but ends up with three assists. And I thought that really on all three made good plays. One was, on the power play, he finds Brazeau's stick in front for deflection and rebound. Wani starts the breakout that leads to Bogvist's goal. And then his assist on Pasternak's third goal, he's actually trying to pass it to Zaka, but it gets deflected right to Pasternak. But that happens because he makes a good play out of the corner and takes the puck to the net aggressively. So, even just beyond the assist, like I thought he looked really solid. I thought he ended some plays defending on that offside. So, all those guys at the bottom of the lineup should be playing with desperation. And I think we're seeing that they are for the most part. Like, I'm not sure anyone's really played themselves out of a job. Like, everyone's making a pretty good case for themselves.
Yeah, and the guy that we're not talking about is Lauko, because he was playing on the third line. And he brought speed to that line. And like, him and Frederick have similar energy. Like, those two are both really high energy players, fast. We'll mix it up if they see the chance or if they feel like they need to. And then Geeky's a big guy. Like, I thought that was a good dynamic, because they're playing Heinen up in the lineup, and that's a line that's looked great too with Zaka and Pasternak. I don't mind the Lauko fit on the third line. But once again, we're talking about when Pat Maroon gets healthy, where does he go?
And I just, despite Lauko's energy, I just find it tough to sell me on a guy with 8 points all year in a third line role, because your top nine are all supposed to be scorers. Like, if you want to be a Stanley Cup contender, you have to have a third line that can score. And it's not pulling teeth for Frederick and Geeky to produce, but it's not an automatic every couple of games. Like, they got to work for their goals. And when you have Lauko with 8 points sitting there, it doesn't seem like an optimal choice for now. It's fine. But yeah, I guess at the end of the day, you can take solace in knowing that everybody's going to play in the playoffs. There's going to be injuries. There's going to be somebody who doesn't perform and gets replaced. Everybody's going to have their fingerprints on the postseason for the Bruins, no matter how far they go. I guess that's one way to look at it. So I'm not going to get too bent out of shape about a perfect lineup for the playoffs. It's going to change. But it's tough to talk about it, because we haven't seen Maroon yet, and maybe we don't even see him until the playoffs. So, and if that's the case, do you just stick him into a playoff series after out being over for 3 or 4 months? I don't know. So I guess we'll have to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I think as far as the third line, Brian, I'm with you. Like, fine to plug Lauko there, game or two in the regular season. He's not a third liner in the playoffs. Van Riemsdyk's obviously the natural fit there. They do have to get him going again. He's gone, I think, 6 games without a goal, or 6 without a point, 13 without a goal, I think. Now, he did just kind of deal with a week-long illness. He missed the game in Montreal. I think he was still kind of battling it a little bit Saturday for his 1,000 game celebration day. But he was a healthy scratch, or we think healthy. Maybe he's still dealing with the illness. Who knows? But he didn't play Tuesday night. That when he's been going, that's been a really good third line, him, Geeky, and Frederick. So I still look at that as, like, that's your best third line with what you have, but you do have to get Van Riemsdyk going again.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think anyone would argue that Lauko is a better offensive producer than Van Riemsdyk to their potentials. But it should be, they should be able to, once the playoffs start, keep all those guys. So have the pieces to the options to rotate in and out depending on what they see. Very positive sign that so far the combination that they have is working. That's really, you're not sitting here scrambling going, well, who the hell else should they call up, because this isn't working. You got guys that you trust back there. Boakes sneaky good. Like, sometimes he makes these plays on his goal, for example, where he just has his speed and he uses it. We knew he's fast, but he also, like, he makes Chychrun look bad. Like, he just angles him away, and Chychrun is not a bad defender, but he made him look kind of silly on that move to the net. And it was a perfect finish, just barely around the foot. There was really only, like, space for, like, maybe a puck and a half to fit, and he got it right in there. I don't know. He's playing with confidence and Beecher's like, yeah, like we've talked about it. I like their fourth line. I wouldn't say that's a weakness for them.
Well, New Jersey drafted him 36th overall in 2017. So he definitely has a top nine skill set. I think Boqvist's issue has just been consistency at the NHL level. And so to your point, Bridget, like, yes, you see these flashes where you're like, that's not your typical fourth liner. So yeah, I mean, he's been turning it on, and don't forget, I mean, he played the first half plus of the season in Providence before he got called up for the first time, really. So look, I think personally, I just, the biggest thing that the Bruins need to make sure they're clicking on all cylinders in the playoffs is their team defense. And you and Scott were kind of talking about that earlier in the podcast, but if the Bruins aren't, if they're not in sync, if they're not intense with their forechecking and their back checking and closing in on oppositions and just playing a really tight, sound defensive team game, it doesn't matter if you have Sidney Crosby or Connor McDavid, you're not going to go anywhere in the playoffs if you don't have that. And so do they have the personnel to do that? I think just as close as anybody does. You got to look at the way Carolina plays and the way Florida plays. Like, they just, those teams, they're tenacious. They don't give you any room. When the Bruins play Carolina, I feel like they're playing on like one of those mini rinks upstairs at a hockey rink. Like, there's no space. And I know Brent Burns and Pesci and Slavin, I know those defensemen are like 25 feet combined in height, but just the way Carolina swarms you and they don't give you any room to breathe. And I feel like Carolina plays the same way. So that's where the Bruins need to adopt that mentality. And they have about a month to get there. I don't think it's where it needs to be right now, if I'm being honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. And I think, you know, I feel like one thing that we maybe haven't discussed enough or given them like leash on is when you have the season they had last year where they're almost perfect all regular season, it's just really hard to do that again for another regular season. Like, there's just almost certainly going to be, you know, slumps or times where your play just isn't up to par, or you just kind of, you're dragging along through the middle of the season. And because they've had a cushion points wise, like they've been safely in the playoffs since the 10th game of the season. At no point has like they've been in any jeopardy of falling out. So it's easy to let, you know, they don't want to, like, they're not, it's not intentional, but to just kind of let that creep into your mind where it's like, we went all out in the regular season last year and what did it get us? Like, you know, like why am I going to bring my best on February 22nd or whatever? You know what I mean? Like, again, like, no one wants to think like that, but it just happens. You know, Tampa, the year, you know, when they get knocked out in 2019 after their historic regular season, they end up winning the cup the next year, but they didn't bring it that whole regular season. They weren't the top team. Like, they took a step back. So not like, I'm not trying to make excuses for them. I just think it's a reality that they weren't going to be on top of their game all regular season. But now's the time where you want to see them getting there. Like, you know, 12 games left, 4 weeks. It doesn't have to be every single game, but for the vast majority of these, you want to see them playing the right way here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that there's positives that if you're watching the way they're playing right now, that you can see like some things have corrected, right? Like, they're, Lindholm is playing better than before he took a little time off with the injury. Jake DeBrusk has come back to the upside and out of the slump. So like, you want him out of a slump when you're heading into the playoffs, and you hope he can finish out the regular season like this, but right now he's on a better track. I think the defense last game was solid. I think the power play looked, well, that second unit looked great. Like, you're getting depth scoring, you're getting good goaltending. I think that where things are trending right now, are positive. I know, like, we can pick apart, like, some of the things that are going wrong, but, like, you look at the way that that line with Heinen, Zach, and Pastrnak is playing, and you're like, the chemistry is there. And you know, and then you got DeBrusque going on the line with Marchand and Coyle, and you know, you can pick different parts of the team like that aren't playing well, but there are really important pieces that they need to happen that are happening right now. So I think that there's reason for optimism. We like to analyze everything, but some of that's talking about the positives, and I think I've seen that over the last few games, especially against Ottawa. I know Ottawa's not the best team, so we'll see what it looks like against the Rangers. But you can see some bright spots, and if DeBrusque plays like that, if the Pastrnak, Zacha, Heinen line sticks together and plays like that, if the defense plays like that, if Brazo and the fourth line and the goaltenders are playing like this, that looks like a successful team.
Well, if one goaltender is playing like this.
Yeah, I mean...
Was that like a little jab at the rotation, or was...
Well, no, Swayman hasn't been good recently. So I'm saying one goaltender at that level.
Goaltending is good. Is that what I should have said? Goaltending is good?
Yeah, I'm just saying Swayman hasn't been his last couple starts.
Scott just wants to disagree with me.
Do you think Swayman's been good?
He's been nine goals. No, but I just like, you could have just been like, yes, Oldmark's playing well.
Scott, you just sounded like the viral video.
We didn't fight at all in Montreal. We didn't fight one time in Montreal. So now we've gotten back, and then now we're fighting with each other.
Well, I'm not going to let it slide when we're saying, you know, everything's great and looking good. Like,
and I'm like, and he's over here like, I'm gonna ruin
his last two games. Like, I don't know, I feel the need to point that out.
I was talking about goaltending, all right? Like, you have a goalie that, never mind, I don't even feel like I need, he just wanted to come at me.
Scott, have you seen that video, that viral video of like the kid, he's like trying to explain that the correlation between the Wicked Witch of the West and Glinda or whatever. He's like, and who was her sister? Witch of the West, bro. That's what you just kind of sound like. You're like, are you going to tell me I'm wrong? Has Swayman been good? Are you going to tell me I'm wrong? I mean, so on paper, like the Bruins last year, their roster was clearly far more talented than their roster this year, objectively. But I fully anticipate being more confident in their ability to win a first round this year than I did them last year, because last year I know we talked about it, but I hated the fact that they drew Florida in the first round. If they played Pittsburgh, they would have swept them, but they played Florida, who had the President's Trophy the prior year, and they didn't have a ton of turnover. The turnover that they did had was Huberto to Calgary, Tkachuk to Florida. I'll take that any day of the week if I'm Florida. And yes, they were playing important hockey all year, but they also had an elite roster that people were sleeping on. And I combine that with, I didn't like the way the Bruins were playing heading into the postseason last year. They were kind of skating by on talent, and there were a lot of loose games there. So I was very trepidatious heading into that first round matchup. And I kind of
was, wow. Thank you. Good one.
Thank you very much. I used to write for WEI. But I definitely picked the Bruins to win that series, like we all did. But I thought it was, I think I said like seven, and I wasn't totally confident. But this year, like, if the Bruins are playing the right way and they're kind of underdogs, I actually might feel more confident going into this year's playoffs, which is crazy when you look at the two rosters side by side on paper from last year to this year. So, yeah, it's a good point you made, Scott, about the Bruins kind of like giving them a leash. Like, yeah, I'm not even gonna criticize them for how they've played so far this year. Like, I agree with you. Like, it's impossible to expect that. We, like, last year, you talk about how you play a whole season, have the greatest season of all time, and losing the first round. How do you get motivated for that next regular season, knowing that the playoffs are all that matter? So I'm not even concerned about how they like played defense all year. To your point, it's now the playoffs are around the corner. If you're gonna turn it on, now's the time. So
yeah,
that's my two cents.
Yep, it's true. We're there. What is 11 games left, guys?
Just about
12.
12?
I think so, right? I think last night was 70.
Yeah, that was our 70th game. Yeah. So I think that probably wraps up for the most part. Was there any final discussion points, guys?
I have a trivia question for you guys. So Bridget brought trivia. Bridget brought trivia to Sunday Skate. I happened to come across my own today. I want to see if you guys know. So with his three goals last night, Pastrnak now has 99 points in the season. He is going to get 100 points for a second straight season. In Bruins history, there are four other players who have had at least two consecutive 100-point seasons. How many of them can you name?
So I'll go Bobby Orr.
Yep.
Yeah.
Orr did it six straight years. 69. So
that was the easy one right there. That was the others.
Rick Middleton.
Nope. He did it twice, but not consecutively.
Okay. So Bobby Orr. Bork.
Nope.
Really?
Bork never had 100 points in a season.
Wow. Okay, so there's four others in addition to Pastrnak. So we have Chief? Bobby Orr.
Nope, Busek did it once.
Espo?
Esposito did it five straight years, 70 to 75.
All right, so Bobby Orr, Phil Esposito, and there's two more. Oh, boy. Well, nobody in the last...
Yeah, not a while.
I don't think. No, I'm trying to think. It has to be pre. I don't think. Did Cam ever do it? I don't think so.
No.
He was too hurt and stuff. I don't think it's anybody from. If it's not Cam Neely, I don't think it's anybody from 1990 to current day besides Pastrnak. Wait, did you say 100 points for two or more seasons
in a row?
More seasons in a row.
Yeah, the only name I might Adam Oates.
Yep.
Okay, so he's
92-93 and 93-94.
So he was the one player 1990 on besides Pastrnak, if it wasn't Cam Neely, that it could have been. So there's one more. So we have Oates or Esposito, and there's one more. Oh boy.
Honestly, I don't know the last one.
This is gonna bug me. Is it pre or Scott? Because if it is, I won't have any idea.
Nope, no? it's post or. He was line mates with Rick Middleton.
It's just too far beyond my time to know the line combinations. I'm gonna have to probably bow out, though. That's really annoying.
He's currently on Nesson.
Oh, was it Barry?
Yeah, Barry Peterson.
Was it really?
Yep. In
wow. 82-83
and 83-84.
Wow.
Wow. Good job, Barry.
That's a good piece of trivia, Scott.
Yeah, mine was. Whose birthdays were on St. Patrick's Day. it wasn't anything besides literally just who, and I gave some facts, you know, some hints. Scott didn't give quite so many hints until at the end there, but yeah, Andrew Ference and Andrew Peak were the answers. Their birthdays were St. Patrick's Day, but.
Speaking of Pastrnak, Scott, he also surpassed Cam Neely on the goal, all-time Bruins goals list.
Yep. Yeah, he's now seventh.
Seventh in climbing.
And still plenty of time.
If he plays the rest of his career in Boston, we know he's here for the next
another seven years.
7 years. I mean, if he's not the franchise leader in goals when it's all said and done, I'd be surprised, obviously. Yeah. But he's just on his way to that. All right, good trivia, Scott. We should do that a little bit more often. That was fun.
Yeah, I opened the floodgates on the trivia, I think, on accident. Because he's like, Bridget, do you have more trivia for this week? I'm like, I can try.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, we're at an hour right now. You guys good to sign off?
Yeah, but I want Xerxes wants to say hi. He's been with me the whole time. Xerxes, wake up. Xerxes, say hi. Say hi.
Wants to say hi, but he's sound asleep.
He's asleep.
Is that cat alive?
He's got 8 more lives.
He's definitely lower than 8 at this point. This is a wild man right here. Yeah, no, he's not getting up. So I'm just going to sit here for the rest of the day because he's too comfortable. Say hi. Come on. Be nice. Say hi. He did. Ow, he bit me.
I don't blame him. I'd bite somebody right. Woke me up too.
Yeah, he was gone. Taking a nice nap.
Yeah.
Now I have.
That's what I do when people wake me up from a nap. I just snap.
Melvin bit this index finger and Xerxes bit this index finger, and now I'm bleeding. Ah, oh, Jesus. I have no good hands anymore. That was my fault. I'm sorry. That was my fault.
All right. Well, before
Scott. I thought he would be more cooperative.
But before Scott bites you through the screen, why don't we sign off and. Thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you on Friday.